Hello friends, this is Christine Hoover from GraceCoversMe.com, and I want to welcome you to the By Faith podcast, where each week in this mini summer season, I have talked to a pastor's wife about life, ministry, marriage, and parenting. Today is the final episode of the season, the Ask Me Anything episode, where I'm answering listeners' questions about all things ministry related. I've asked my husband Kyle to join me for this one, not only because he's my favorite person, but also because I get an up-close look at his life, and I think he is an incredible leader and pastor. I wanted you to hear from his perspective regarding some of the questions you sent in. Before we get to our conversation, I want to take a moment to say thank you to my Patreon supporters. Back in the spring, I realized I needed some financial help to cover the costs of producing this podcast. And when I put out the call, I had people immediately jump on board. I was so encouraged by that, and I have continued to be encouraged by their support and help. This episode is dedicated to those special folks who have supported me in making this podcast happen each week. Thank you so much. If you want to jump on board too, there is a link with more information in the show notes. Friends, I invite you to join me back here in September for a season full of conversations about the ins and outs, ups and downs of friendship. Friendship is a complex topic, so we have so much to discuss and think through. I can't wait to share with you the wonderful conversations I've already been having with wise and insightful people. If you haven't already subscribed to the By Faith podcast, I encourage you to do so today. And better yet, start inviting your friends to subscribe as well. I actually think these episodes are going to be great conversation starters for you and for those around you in your life. All right, let's get down to it. You've sent in the questions and we've answered. Here is my chat with my husband, Kyle. I am so glad to be joined by my husband, Kyle Hoover, for the Ask Me Anything episode to end season two, where we've been talking about ministry. And I thought, who better to have than my husband, who is a pastor and my best friend and my favorite person in the world, and who I think does this whole ministry thing really well. So welcome, Kyle.
Thanks. It's good to be here. And I have many questions for you.
I have many questions for you, too. And all of these questions have been submitted by readers of my blog, Grace Covers Me, or listeners to the podcast this summer. So thank you for those of you who have submitted questions. We're going to try to get to almost every single one if we can. Okay, so I want you to hear a little bit about my husband and his background with ministry so you kind of know the context from which we're answering these questions. It's a very specific context that may or may not translate to where you are, but hopefully we're going to be able to share some things that are helpful to you no matter where you are. So, Kyle, tell us about the ministry roles that you've been in your time in ministry and what you're doing now.
Sure. Well, it all started as I was executive director for a college men's ministry called Brothers Under Christ. Think of it as a Christian men's fraternity. And then also I was a college pastor in a local church where we were students at Texas A&M, Central Baptist Church. I was also served as the missions pastor there for a while. And then once we left there, I became a church planter in Charlottesville, Virginia, where now I am a mere pastor.
A mere pastor, you love that phrase. And we actually did a whole episode in last season where I interviewed you and you talked about what that means to be a mere pastor. But can you summarize it really quickly, what you mean by that?
That just means that I am tried to be a basic, faithful, tried and true, God-honoring pastor.
Okay. So you're the lead pastor, been the lead pastor of this church we planted for 10 years now, almost.
Crazy.
I would love to go back to the beginning when you first started in ministry and both of us had no idea what we were doing. But are there things that, as you look back, that you wish you had known? You wish somebody had told you in your first years of ministry?
Yeah, and I've heard you talk about it before because we've talked about it at home. I think one thing that stands out is I wouldn't try to be Jesus for people. I am not the Christ. And someone else is. That role's been taken. And so my calling is to be an under-shepherd of his, to point people to him, to not try to act like I am him perfectly. But my role, really, and so my goal is faithfulness and fruitfulness. That is what God has called me to do. That's the way that Jesus the Christ will receive the most glory. And that's my task and my job is to not be concerned about who is around or who isn't around, but I'm to shepherd the flock of God amongst me. Mm-hmm. What about you? What do you wish someone had told you?
I mean, this is going to sound so dumb, but I wish somebody had told me the gospel. When we started in ministry, I did not have a clear understanding of the gospel, meaning that I am a sinner and that there's nothing that I can do to save myself, to change myself, to make myself righteous. I did not understand that when we started. And so there was a lot of what I was doing that was based upon trying to earn the approval of God and earn the approval of others, because I didn't have this understanding that I was secure in the love of Christ and that I could know that based upon what Jesus did for me on the cross, that he made me righteous and that I am approved because of him. And so there was a lot of difficulty and dysfunction in the beginning of ministry for me, because I used ministry and what I did to try to get things from other people and to try to prove myself before them and before God. And so I wish that somebody had explained that to me, that this is the gospel and that ministry flows out of that, that it has to flow out of that, or else it's not going to work for me or for others. I'm going to be very focused on myself. I'm going to be very focused on what I can get from other people rather than loving God and letting the overflow of his love for me pour out onto other people.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. But what about when we started church planting? Because one of the questions here that your reader said was, my husband and I are working towards church planting. He's been in pastoral ministry for many years already, and we have a family. In the season of having a young family, I don't always feel excited about church planting. Were there times in your early years of church planting that you just simply obeyed God's call, yet lacked an excitement for it?
Yeah, I think this question could be summarized as, what do you wish somebody had told you in the beginning of church planting? And I think that would be a little bit different than what I wish somebody had told me when we first started in ministry. So I would say to this question, did you lack some excitement for it? I don't know that I would say I lacked excitement for it, but I would say that I had fear and that I didn't know what I was doing. And so I wonder if somebody who lacks excitement for it is someone who kind of just doesn't really want to have to acknowledge the huge risk and vulnerability you're taking to dive into church planting. There are no safety nets when it comes to church planting, and that is very scary. It's very risky, and I wish that somebody had addressed that, that here's some common fears that you're going to face, and it's a very normal thing to feel this way, to, for me, wonder what's plan B. I want to have a plan B because I want a sense of security. I want to be able to remove all fear, but you really can't. You can't remove the risk that church planting just is. And so I wish that somebody had come to me and said in those first few years of the preparation stage, the moving stage, the launching stage, I wish somebody had said to me how faithful God is, that he will be with me in every stage, that I can rely on him for the strength that I need to do something that feels uncomfortable, whether it's talking to somebody I don't know, or it's opening our home to start a church, or whatever it is, that God will be with me and that he will give me the resources I need for that day and that moment that it requires. And so when I say God is faithful, a lot of times we jump to the idea that that means our church is going to be a success, that it's going to be what we imagine in our mind, that that's what God's faithfulness will be. But really, God's faithfulness is that he is with us every moment and every step and will enable us to accomplish the task that he's given us.
I think you said something interesting in there, that when we were at a established church, there were safety nets, and then when we went and planted, there were not safety nets. What do you mean by that? What are the safety nets that an established church has that are different from church planting?
Well, an established church has a children's ministry that has programs that you can take your children to, and you know they're going to grow up and this environment, well, I mean, I'm speaking for myself. I grew up in that environment, and so my kids, I want my kids to have that. An established church has a set salary and people to actually tithe and pay that salary. I mean, an established church is established. There are people there to minister to in church planting. We had no people. We had nothing, and we were starting everything from scratch. Everything.
Yeah, and I think that there's, in an established church, there's at least a sense of a trajectory and a consistency with things, and everything in a church plant is brand new.
Yeah.
And relationships are typically brand new. Yeah. Everything starts over all at the same time, and that's definitely scary.
Yeah, that honestly may be the first time I really knew what it meant to walk by faith, and so there's a gift in that. There's a gift in saying, I'm scared out of my mind, I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm going to walk forward by faith. Honestly, I would do it all over again in a heartbeat. But it has not been easy at any stage of the church plant. It hasn't been easy.
No, it has not.
So I wanted you to join me, Kyle, because I think there's some things that you're especially good at as a leader and in ministry. And I know I get to speak with a lot of pastors' wives, and I hear their perspective and their questions, and sometimes their questions are related to their husbands and how can they help and encourage their husbands? How can they bring maybe an issue or a problem to him? And so I think I really wanted to have your perspective today as a pastor, as a leader for women and maybe their husbands listening. So I want to talk to you about a few of the hurts and hangups of ministry, because a lot of the questions that I received were about hurts, about bitterness, about criticism, about discouragement. These are things that we all deal with in ministry. So I want to ask you about some of those things. And one of the biggest hurts for pastors and their wives is when people leave the church. And so can you first explain why this is such a hard thing for pastors and their wives? And then I would love to hear how you kind of talk yourself through that. You've taught me how to kind of process those exits. So can you speak to that?
Sure. Number one is I think it can be hurtful because of the investment that you have for these people when they leave. Like, these are, you know, a lot of times it's hurtful when you know them really well because you've invested a lot. Like, you've prayed for them over something. You've done life with them. You've experienced, you know, victories and failures together. And so it can be easy to take it personally, to think that it's a rejection of you. It almost never is. It rarely is, but usually it's a culmination of things. And so I think that's a hard pill to swallow, to think about it from a holistic perspective and not just personally. It would be great if followers of Jesus got some instructions on how to leave a church well. Because I think some of the pain could be avoided. For example, the folks that just kind of slink out the back door, that don't talk to people, or tell them that they are leaving or working through their problems together, where it's just like, and we're gone. You know, and you don't know about it, you don't hear about it, or you hear about it later, or they leave out of just anger immediately. So how they leave is a big factor in how much that hurts or not.
Well, for those listening who are not pastors and wives, can you help them think through what is the best way for me to leave a church? If I really feel like God is leading me on, what should they do?
I'll give you an example of some people who left our church really well. So they met with me and they talked through some struggles about doctrine, what we believe, and where they're at. And they, you know, we had these ongoing conversations that were very encouraging and affirming, but we had these different ideas about doctrine and the way we talked about this from the pulpit or that they just disagreed with. But we worked through it together, and then eventually they invited me and another elder over, and they were like, we think it's time for us to go. I think it's helpful if you're not surprised by it, but you know that it's been a prayerful, intentional decision all along. And I would love it if church folk would leave the church that way, where their pastors almost knew it and saw it coming, You know, because of a lot of conversations and dialogues, things like that, I think that would be really helpful. That is a good way to leave.
And I think I know who you're speaking of, and we see them still around town, and it's great to see them. They don't avoid us. We can have conversations, celebrate where one another are, because they left with respect and care.
Yeah, they're coming to our 10-year anniversary celebration, and it'll be a joyful time because they did it so well. And so a lot of the pain is gone from that. But it doesn't help if they don't leave well. You still have to process that. And I think the way to do that is you often have to preach yourself the gospel and remind yourself that these are not my people. These are the Lord's. Like, they belong to Him. And then sometimes there's just people need to go, and that it's not. And to depersonalize that at different times and different reasons, people just leave.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's just to settle into the reality that that's going to happen to everyone. I remember the first time it happened for us, I almost felt like it was this short circuit of the program, but this is what happens. And at some level, we'll all be sitting around Jesus, worshiping Him, and we'll be okay with all of it. Mm-hmm. We really will.
Yeah, I think I've had to learn that if God is leading me, and I can trust Him to lead me, the question is, can I trust Him to lead other people? And of course, sometimes people are not leaving for great reasons, but I still can trust God that He will do in their life what He needs to do. So they belong to God. Like, as you said, they don't belong to me. So that frees me up to kind of let them go and to not take it personally because I may not understand what God is doing. Of course, sometimes it just hurts and I have to grieve that, and that's okay. But ultimately, I can trust God.
Yeah. And I think you just always have to be aware of being that person that's always blaming them for leaving, that you always attribute to them, well, they don't get it, or they're not good enough, or they have these ulterior motives. And sometimes it's just they need to go seek the Lord with a different community of people elsewhere.
Yeah.
And it's not, you don't have to attribute negative things to them and why they're leaving.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about another hurt that often we deal with, and that's criticism. When you're a leader and you're out front, criticism is really inevitable. And there are obviously different types of criticism, some being people coming with love, some people not coming with love. But how do you personally process criticism as a leader?
Well, I think the first thing you have to look at is every little, you know, crumb of criticism that comes your way, you should first look at and ask, is this valid? Do they have something? And maybe it's not all true, but is there some truth in there? And so you have to look at that honestly and humbly. And then I think that's a key thing, to go to them and own and apologize and confess and repent of whatever you are responsible for just even the contributing factors that kind of were a part of that. But I think one of my favorite stories that helps me a lot is, you know, criticism that David received after they'd come back and the wives and kids were all stolen, taken, and they were like, David needs to die for this. And what did he do? It says that he renewed himself in the Lord. You know, I'm not David, but that is the call for all of us, that we all have to seek our identity and seek who we are from the Lord. And we ultimately, that is where we get our strength from, not from a lack of criticism and affirmation, but we renew ourselves in the Lord in the good times and in the bad times. And then some of the criticism, we just have to absorb it. Like, we just have to receive that and know that that's going to happen at times. And I think a lot of times we get really sideways when we feel like we have to avenge ourselves or defend ourselves or have these rerun conversations in our head where we're always, you know, we always win that rerun conversation, that dialogue. And I think we just have to let some things go, and we realize that our battle is not against flesh and blood. That's not the enemy here. That person isn't the enemy, but we have bigger things to be about and to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think some of it comes down to some people are never going to like you.
You've said that we want our church to be a place where people can bring their concerns. That if they have a thought, a suggestion, a concern, that they know that they can bring it to the pastor and he will listen and he will hear it. And he will treat them with respect and love and do with it what the Lord leads. I've always thought that was really helpful because I tend to be very defensive. I don't want to hear criticism. I do sometimes, I've found myself making decisions to try to avoid disappointing people and avoid criticism. But that's been really helpful for me because I've seen in different organizations how when people don't feel like there's an avenue that they can bring a concern and actually be taken seriously, that it actually creates a very unhealthy culture, that there are more gossip and more slander and more criticism, in fact, because there's not a sense of safety and security within the church or within the organization because they don't feel like they have anywhere they can go with their concern. And so I think that practicing receptive listening to concerns and criticism is actually working toward a healthy church.
Yes. And I think if you can develop a culture of honesty and humility, then so much potential criticism can be alleviated.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's right. I think a lot of times if just the pastor will make someone feel heard and cared for, then a lot of times that's enough. They don't need more than that. But if they don't feel heard from the pastor, then they'll go be heard by other people. And that is when you've got problems on your hands.
Mm-hmm.
I think the hard part about these hurts is that they often happen unseen from church members. And I think it's especially hard for you when that happens to me.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about private hurts. How do you handle those? How do you fight bitterness yourself?
Mm-hmm. Well, it is hard for me, but you don't tell me. I mean, you don't tell me when people are criticizing you. Sometimes you'll tell me, but it's generally a very, not anything super harsh. So I feel like you protect me from that. But I do experience and take on the weight of your stress, or if you are feeling discouraged, or if you are facing criticism, I do take that on. And that can be really, really painful for me. And I think for pastor's wives, I just want to give words for that. Because for a pastor's wife, she sometimes knows a lot of things and knows what is happening in a lot of people's lives that no one else will ever know. And then sometimes that's really good because I get to see what God is doing. Sometimes it can be really painful and hard. But for pastor's wives, we have nowhere to go with that in the sense that I can't go and right a wrong. I can't go and have a conversation with somebody based upon what they've said to you. I can't go and bring resolution to a situation going on in the church. So I'm holding these things, but I have no recourse to actually do anything about them. And I think that's what a lot of pastors' wives, I know they do. We experience this, and that's one of the hardest things about being a pastor's wife. Because what it can do, if we let it, is to grow this bitterness in us, where we become bitter against certain people. We become bitter against the church at large. We sometimes can become bitter against our husbands and that his job has created this dynamic in our lives. And so bitterness is a huge issue for pastors' wives. And sometimes even I've met pastors' wives and I can read it on their faces before I even know them, that they are an unhappy pastor's wife. And it's because of this root of bitterness has grown and has borne fruit in their lives. And so I think dealing with bitterness is one of the most important things in my life. That when something happens, that I don't hold on to it, but I release it to the Lord and I go to him and I can pray. You know, and sometimes this is a long process to get to the point where I can pray for a person who I have felt wounded by, to pray that God would help me to embrace what this role means for me, because sometimes I don't want to embrace that. And so I think dealing with bitterness for me is just as soon as it shows itself. I do not want to be that person. And so as soon as it shows itself, I want to deal with it through prayer, through talking to you. A lot of times you'll help me get perspective.
I think you're onto something really good. that it would be worthwhile talking about.
Okay.
I think it would be helpful to discuss how a husband who's a pastor can talk to his wife about criticism, both negative things regarding the church and positive things. Because I think that's a huge difficulty for a wife is the incapacity to solve it, work on it, fix it, address it, the difficulties and the criticisms that come. Where I can go to work on it and address it and own it or change it or whatever.
And
but
talk
you,
to the elders
yes,
about it.
I can. But you, it's you. There's no capacity to handle that at all. And so what can pastors do to help their wives in the way that they talk about criticism, talk about the church, the difficulties, the challenges?
Well, I don't think pastors need to be specific. I don't think they need to tell their wives every detail, which is hard because I'm sure they want to at times. But I would say, pastors, you need to go to other pastors. You need to go to the elders in your church or however your church is set up. If you are the top dog and you don't have anybody as a peer, you need to go to another pastor in your community. You need to go to a pastor friend in a different community. If it's something that you really need to process details with, I don't think your wife is the person to do that because she is going to, it's going to hurt her more than it hurts you. And so, but I do think you can say it generally. Just so there are times where you say, I'm dealing with a hard situation. I'm dealing with, somebody sent me an email. So I know in general what you're experiencing, but I don't know the details. I don't know the person. You never tell me the person. And that is really helpful for me. There are times where I do know people's names or I do know the situation and I can put faces with the situation. That is the hardest time for me because I'm always going to take up your side. And so I think it's just helpful if it's not necessary for her to know, don't tell her at all. If it is necessary for her to know because it's an ongoing thing that's really affecting you, tell her what you're feeling, but don't give her the details.
Yeah. And I think another thing I would add in that you have asked me at different times too, when you've been discouraged or whichever, is tell me good things about the church.
Yeah.
Tell me that there are good things happening. And at first I'm, because of discouragement, I'm like, well, is there anything good happening? And then I'll think about it. I'm like, okay, well, there are.
Yeah.
And I think that if a pastor's going to go home and be discouraged and talk about his criticism, then I think a pastor also needs to go home and they need to celebrate the wins together.
Yes.
Well, and say that. And you asking me that question, I think is helpful.
Yeah.
And I think it prompts me to be like, all right, I need to be encouraging her with church life and relationships as well.
Because there's a lot to be encouraged about. And a lot of times the focus, the criticism can seem like the biggest thing, but in reality, it's very small relative to the good things that are happening.
So it's good to celebrate the wins and to talk about mm-hmm. the things that are going well
mm-hmm.
also.
But I think it is sometimes helpful for pastors to go home and say, they don't have to say, so-and-so said this, but they could say, hey, I kind of need your perspective here. This is what I've heard. This is what somebody has told me. Is there truth in that? And letting the wife have an opportunity to say what's true. And if it's not true, it's helpful for the wife to be able to speak that to her husband. So I think it's a case-by-case basis, but I think the general idea we've gotten across. But I think what we're really talking about here and what is so important for pastors and wives is how do we stay healthy and how do we stay in ministry for the long haul? That's kind of been a question I've been thinking about a lot because we've reached the point of we've been in ministry almost 20 years. We're in middle age. I hate that term, but
the truth hurts.
But here we are, and we want to make it to the end. And so how do we do that? And so we've kind of been talking over the last few years about being intentional about these things. And I want to share what some of those are, and I think that'll lead to some good questions. But one is that the most essential thing in our life is that we are in daily relationship with the Lord and really communing with him, and especially when it comes to things like bitterness, like we were talking about, the Lord is going to convict me of those things, and he's going to minister to me in those things and to help me remember who he is, and that he's worth this life and he's worth the ministry that he's called me to. And so daily communing with him, I remember I'm loved. I don't have anything to prove. I am secure, so that when someone is disappointed with me, I can absorb that because I'm secure in him. So communing with him, our relationship together as husband and wife, and being intentional about enjoying one another and spending time together, because the busyness of life and ministry and our kids' ages and all that, it just pulls us more, you know, it tries to pull us apart. And so how can we be intentional about that? Because that's life-giving. That's helpful for us as we continue on. But also, I really want to make note of two things. And two of those things, one is that we are in communion and relationship with other people, with friends. Mm-hmm. And developing friendship, and I think this can be really, really challenging. We did an episode earlier with Katie Orr about friendship, so if you want to go back and check that out, you can. But I think it's this fine line of being vulnerable, but being wise with who we're vulnerable with, but being intentional to pursue those type of relationships, and to really at sometimes ask those people to press into us, to ask us questions, to care for us as people. Because a lot of times as the pastor and the pastor's wife, I don't think people always know what to do with us, and they get a little nervous when we try to share something personal. They're not sure what to say. And so it takes a very specific kind of person to be in relationship with us. And sometimes that can be discouraging for us, as we've talked about personally.
Sure.
But just continuing to be intentional about pursuing those things. And one thing that I've found is, you know, in relation again to this bitterness or some of the struggles of behind the scenes, I may not be able to share those things with my closest friends, but I can share with them what I'm feeling and what I'm experiencing because of those things. And these are people who won't press for details, but they listen and they can help me, point me back to Christ, and that he's with me and he will help me. And then the second thing that really is a huge key factor for us is stopping and resting. So this has been really important for me, because I would say this year has been a really hard one for us. It's been a hard year, and some of that is because friends have moved away, and that's been really sad. But then also, rest has been hard to come by. And I actually got this question from a reader, and I wanted to read it because it basically describes my life in the past 6 months. But she says, I've been a pastor's wife for 15 years. I'm currently 41 and going through, I'm not 41, I wish I still was 41, going through the weirdest time in my life. There is an increased insecurity in all areas, a lack of motivation, and increased apathy. Spiritually, the Lord is still there and gracious to allow me to continue to press into him during this time, but my time with him has been very slow. I'm slow to hear what he's saying. I'm raising 2 kids. I'm continuing to try to be active and involved in ministry in a healthy way, although I've pulled back in many areas, and we're okay with that. My husband and I are on very good terms, and we talk about everything. I'm getting counsel from my mentors and have monthly accountability with 2 people who know me really well. My question is this, she says, have you ever gone through something like this as a pastor's wife? And do you have any general suggestions for women in my stage of life when it feels like tons of things are changing and shifting, and I'm still in this role of being a pastor's wife? And I would say, yes, I've experienced that, because that's been my year. I feel like a lot of things have been shifting and changing, and I don't quite know what my role is right now in our church. And there have been times where I've been just really uncertain and confused. And I realized, and I told my husband at some point this spring, I feel like I'm a vending machine, but nobody has to put any money in to get anything out. They just come up and push a button, and I do it. I meet that need. And I was starting to feel lost in it all, and feeling discouraged and down. And so I really started to dig down deep into why I was feeling that way. And I realized that the heart of it was this idea that I don't want to disappoint people. And it's hard for me to say no. It's hard for me to stop and to to rest and to do what's good for me and to refuel so that I am able to give to others.
And I think that every single year of life is going to feel like there is shifting and changing, because that's what happens. You know, we get older, children get older, their needs changes, you know, when they just are little, it's just the mechanics of taking care of them. And then later on, it becomes the emotional needs of connecting with them and helping them. And so I think it's always changing. But I think that a key thing is to realize that first, it's always going to be changing, but then also adapting as you go to these changing realities. And I think that you and I, our frog gets cooked because we don't adapt to the change soon enough, and we don't realize, okay, this is a new reality for us. And so we operate in old realities when life has changed. Yeah. And I think we oftentimes, we make decisions that we are okay to say yes to in the years past that we ought to be saying no to now.
Yeah.
And I think that's just always something, if it's helpful, that would be good to always think through, what do I need to do this coming year to be a healthy person in the Lord? And how do I walk in that well, knowing that my life is always going to be changing because my circumstances are going to be changing mm-hmm. as well.
And I think it's very clear that there are specific ways, as I just talked about, that God cares for us. I don't really like the term self-care because I feel like that's a kind of self-centered, but I like the term God care because there are specific ways that God has designed to care for us. That would be a relationship with Him, relationships with others, His Word, but also rest. He's given us these gifts. And for me, that's been one of the biggest ones is rest, is saying no to some things, even though I know I could possibly do it. I do have the gift for it or whatever, but it's just not going to work for our family to be healthy and thriving. And so that's been a huge component for me, is recognizing that I'm drawn to make decisions according to, I don't want to disappoint people,
mm-hmm.
and being willing to say no.
Right.
To disappoint.
Right.
So let's talk about this rest issue, because it's a huge issue. A lot of pastors and their wives might say, it's probably more pastors than their wives might say, they have a really hard time actually taking a day off and actually putting away the cell phone at night. And I think you're really good at this. And in fact, you're better at it than I am. So I would love for you to address that. How do you guard your Sabbath? How do you turn off work?
One of the best things I realized when we moved from Texas to Virginia was something called snow. And it would come, you know, it usually would come in, you know, stacks and piles, and everything that you had planned for that day was typically wiped out. You didn't, you know, we couldn't get out of our neighborhood, and so we just called those snow days, and so everything was changed and different. The day just looked absolutely different. And I was like, man, it would be great if we could just plan that. You know, like you could chart those in. And then because I'm not a very smart guy, I realize that is what a Sabbath is. Like, that is a snow day once a week that God has ordained, declared as His will for my life, to have a day where the things of work are set aside and I am to enjoy. And I'm enjoying who He is, I'm enjoying my family, I'm enjoying my wife, I'm the things that recreate me. And so I've, you know, it's embarrassing to admit, but I was slow on the uptake of, like, this is already there for everyone out there. And God's, again, God has ordained this. It is a part of His will for my life. And I know that it looks totally different for people. You know, I get asked about this all the time regarding young children.
Yeah.
And it looks different, right? And sometimes you're like, man, it's a snow hour, you know, or it's a Sabbath hour. But how do you build in some intentional rest? Because God's not surprised that we have children or that we are busy but yet He still says, this is my will and plan for you. And how do I embrace and maximize that the best I can?
So how do you do it?
Well, the first thing is I never do Friday meetings. That's my Sabbath is Friday. So I don't do Friday meetings. Someone asks, I always get asked for lunches, meetings on Friday. My answer is no, every time. I also don't check my email at all. I don't check my phone. You know, I don't pick up the phone when it rings. I explain.
You do check to see who's calling.
I do.
Just to make sure.
Just, yes. I don't just bury the phone for the day.
Yeah.
I will check voicemails to be like, okay, is this an emergency? If it's an emergency, I will pick it up. But so I'm just very guarded about what I take. I only read life-giving things, but I think that's the key thing is I think sometimes people view Sabbath as an emptying of like of just a setting aside of things. And so their image of it is this, you know, you're sitting in a room doing nothing all day long. But I think that it's supposed to be a full day, full of life-giving things, full of seeking the Lord, full of rejoicing over the good things he's had, of counting his blessings, about praying about things together, full of time with family or wife or whatever, or even just fun things that are life-giving.
Mm-hmm. So some of the things we do, and of course we're at the stage of life, our kids go to school and they're away on Fridays. So during the school day is when we do this. And we typically go to breakfast very cheaply. We go on a walk if it's weather permitting. We'll spend the morning walking and getting coffee, and that's kind of it. And then we'll read. We do a lot of reading, sometimes take a nap, talking. That's really it. That's what it looks like. So it doesn't cost a lot of money, if any money. It's things that we enjoy. Sometimes we might play tennis, or we might, you know, we enjoy those kind of things.
What did we do in the early days?
In the fog
of babies?
Honestly, we didn't start doing... We were not thinking about this then, and that got us into a lot of trouble. As far as burnout, between you and I, we were struggling, I would say, in those years. And then we decided that we were going to, once we started implementing it, I don't think our kids were all in school yet.
No.
So I think what we did was we switched off, that you would have the kids at home, and I would go to a coffee shop and read or whatever. And then I'd come home and you would do it. We would switch.
That's right.
And so I think you just have to get creative. If you have somebody else you can switch kids with, where they take your kids for the day and then the next week you take their kids, whatever it is. Like, I just think sometimes we're so quick to say, oh, well, we can't do it.
Right.
But we don't get creative and think, how could we make it work?
Exactly.
Could you put the kids down early for bedtime? Could you let them have a treat once a week of watching a movie and having pizza while you and your husband are in a different room talking and having dinner together? You know, get creative. That's what I would say. It's taken a lot of intentionality, because it is so easy to say, oh yeah, it's okay, I can do a meeting that day, or I was just going to check my email this one time, and it ends up getting away from you. So we still fight against it.
Yeah, and I think that's the key idea, is how much time have you spent in intentionally thinking about how to enjoy the Sabbath?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a very important question for people to process.
And we have said over and over, Fridays are our sanity. Like, we truly, I don't know if we would be sane right now if we did not do that.
Favorite day of the week, by far.
Yeah.
All right, we've got some quick-fire questions, because there's some ladies who want your relational insights. So here we go.
Okay.
How do you intentionally connect with or build relationships with people in different seasons of life?
I think this is a great question, because these are coming from women who really want to do that, and they're wanting to connect. Like, say, a young mom who has lots of kids under her feet, she's wanting to reach out to an empty nester or to a single woman in her church. I would say the best thing that works for this is just to simply ask that person, what would work for you? So a lot of times people do that with me. They'll say, okay, your kids are teenagers and how could we have you over for dinner? Or what would work for you? So I just think asking the person what their schedule is like and when would be a good time to get together is great. But also just invite them over into your life. I think a young mom with kids, you can invite anybody in any stage over to your home and to be a part of your life. And sure, your kids may be running around crazy, but you have made that connection and you're reaching out. And I think it can grow from there. I think it's really great to invite a single woman into your family to have dinner with you. I think your home is the best bet, inviting people into your home and your life.
How can a single person reach out to a married one?
I think just ask. Say, hey, again, would it work for your family to come over to my apartment for dinner? If not, could we go for a walk? There's a lot of different options that would work. And I think most people are very receptive to that.
All right, another question from a reader. My husband and I will be entering into ministry within the next few years. All my life, I've struggled with being shy and reserved. For example, I struggled to walk up to someone new and introduce myself, which is obviously a necessary thing to do as a pastor's wife. I also struggle with getting past small talk and with talking to people who don't reach out to me first. Can you offer any general tips or advice you can offer the shy, soon-to-be pastor's wife?
Well, I would say I can relate. I actually am shy and have been, but I've taught myself to do this, and I actually enjoy it now. I'm a one-on-one kind of person. I don't like big crowds and trying to figure that out and navigating that, but I do like the one-on-one. And so what I do on Sunday mornings especially is I often pray before I go to church, Lord, would you just ordain 2-3 conversations you want me to have and help me to know, just kind of give me that little nudge that, you know, there's a person you can talk to and really focus in on that person. So I don't have to do this small talk. I don't have to do this mingling so much as I can really have a good conversation with one or two people. And so that's my intention. I go in and I kind of learned a script. You know, I think I would say to this person, just practice even thinking of questions that you are going to ask that person, that you can ask every person. Where are you from? Or, you know, what do you do for a living or something like that? What's a question that can go in any conversation, and just have those questions in the back of your mind. And something else that might be helpful is if you're thinking of someone on Sunday morning and just the Lord's bringing them to mind, maybe go pursue and seek out that person when you get to church and have some questions already in your mind that you'd like to ask them. Maybe it's following up on a previous conversation that you've had. But I think ultimately it's practice makes perfect. And you're going to say things that are awkward. I've done it a million times, but it's worth it. And I think you learning that and reaching out to people respond to that. And you will feel more comfortable in doing it as you practice it.
Yeah, I think it's always good to have some ready questions to pull out of the bag at a moment's notice, the same ones. And then I think a transitional one can oftentimes be, what's been the highlight of your week this week? Or something that's not too creepy and awkward and deep, you know, too soon, but it's kind of like a transitional, like, okay, this is kind of next level type thing.
Yeah, that's a good question.
All right, another question. How do you cultivate relationships among staff wives?
Well, we have, at our church, we have elders, and there's 7 of them total, including you, and I am the wife of you, and so there's all of them but one have a wife, and then we have a few staff people that have wives. And so what I've tried to do is to do 2 things annually. One, invite everyone over, including kids, and having food and people bring things. It's a potluck and we just hang out. And then also once a year, I try to get the wives together for a dinner or something like that where we can catch up and talk. And that's not a whole lot, I would say. Some people do more. But what I try to do is to check in with them individually. So most of them I will have at some point had coffee or gone for a walk with. I'm just trying to connect with them in a relational way to where, and not just because they're staff wives, but because I care about them and I want to encourage them and support them in their role. So obviously I'm a little bit different to them because their husbands sometimes are, their boss is my husband. And so it may not be necessarily a deep friendship, but it is some relationship that I think is really important.
Great. All right. And this last question we'll use as a wrap up from one of your readers. What is one of the sweetest things the Lord has taught you this year, specifically through this podcast? What's one of the most challenging things, and what do you look forward to most in the next season of your podcast?
Well, it's been a really fun thing to do. I've enjoyed it. What the Lord has taught me is, I think He's reminding me how He pulls things together. I kind of feel like this has been a full circle moment for me. I got a counseling degree and I love one-on-one conversations. I love really digging deep into a subject. And I think that God's been reminding me of that skill that I've never worked as a counselor. I use that in my relationship sometimes, but I feel like in some ways this is pulling out some of those passions and skills that I had forgotten really that how much I loved. So that's been fun. I think the challenges is just a lot more work than I thought it would be, and finding time for that plus writing. And so, yeah, that's been a challenge. And then I'm super looking forward to the next season. We're going to talk about friendship. One of the things I'm most looking forward to about that is just being able to look at friendship from a lot of different facets, because friendship is a really complex subject. And as I sat down to write my book, Messy Beautiful Friendship, I realized just how complex the subject is, and then I wouldn't be able to address everything. And so I think the podcast will really give me an opportunity to address different things and dig deep into that subject.
Great. That sounds exciting. I will tune in for many reasons. Can I answer this question too?
Sure.
I think one thing that I've really enjoyed about the podcast is each week when it comes into my inbox, I listen to it and I'm like, who is this person and what are they going to have to say? And it's always been so encouraging to hear people's stories of them walking by faith and in different circumstances, different things going on in their lives, but yet they're all trusting the Lord, oftentimes through difficult things, but also really trusting Him for big things of what God's doing in their lives. And it's just very encouraging.
I'm thankful. Yeah. Thank you. Thanks for joining me today.
And thanks for having me on as well.
Friends, if you want to dig deeper into the heart of ministry, I'd love for you to check out my book, The Church Planting Wife. It's for church planting wives, but I've been told countless times by women in all types of ministry that they found themselves in the pages of the book. I'd love to be a friend to you in whatever ministry you're doing through this book. I've linked to it in the show notes of the podcast. Thank you so much for listening to this mini season of By Faith. I hope these conversations have been helpful, hopeful, and encouraging to you as you minister to others in your everyday life. I want to leave you with one of my very favorite verses regarding the ministry God has called me to. It's Hebrews 6:10, and it says this, "For God is not unjust so as to overlook your work and the love that you have shown for His name in serving the saints as you still do." Friends, join me in September as we take a deep dive into the topic of friendship. And until then, keep walking forward by faith.